VOA News. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting. U.S. forces in Syria have a plan in place for their much-talked-about withdrawal, only it will likely not see all of them leave the fight against the Islamic State terror group anytime soon. That's the word from the U.S. Defense Department on Monday, which says the 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, as part of the fight against the Islamic State, have an approved framework for the withdrawal, a framework that is conditions-based and will not subject the troop withdrawal to an arbitrary timeline. The Pentagon says that commanders are now engaged in executing that withdrawal. U.S.-China trade talks opened Monday in Beijing, with negotiators for the world's two biggest economies trying to resolve tariff disputes that have roiled world markets in recent weeks. U.S. and Chinese officials expressed optimism before the two-day talks. Tesla on Monday began building a factory for its electric cars in China, the first of its facilities to be located outside the United States. The company will build its Model 3 vehicles at the site. It says it hopes to eventually have a production capacity of 500,000 vehicles a year. The factory is owned by Tesla, a departure from the usual Chinese policy for foreign businesses. Officials in Thailand say a young Saudi woman who was stopped in Thailand as she tried to flee to Australia to seek asylum has left the airport in Bangkok and is under the care of the UN Refugee Agency. The Thai official said the woman will not be forcibly sent back to Saudi Arabia. The 18-year-old woman fled Kuwait during a family vacation. This is VOA News. The government of Gabon has regained control in the capital, Libreville, after an attempted coup, officials said on Monday. A government spokesman said that a lieutenant, the leader of the self-declared coup, has been captured. The lieutenant was the last of five members of the group to be arrested Monday. Two soldiers associated with the coup attempt were killed by government forces. The United Nations Refugee Agency has launched a $430 million campaign to help displaced people and refugees from the Central African Republic. Correspondent Moki Edwin-Kinzeka reports for VOA from a camp on Cameroon's eastern border.
The UNHCR says fighting in CAR has produced over 500,000 refugees and even more internally displaced. A lull in fighting in some areas allowed nearly 250,000 displaced to return home in 2018. More than half the population, nearly 3 million people, are dependent on aid. CAR has been beset with conflict since the Seleka, a coalition of Muslim rebels, forced President Francois Bozize from office in 2013. The country has since been plagued by communal violence, mainly between Christian and Muslim militants. Though the country held elections in February 2016, the government has been unable to stem the conflict.
A top French cleric is on trial on charges of failing to act against sexual abuse allegations targeting a priest in his diocese. The Archbishop of Lyon, a cardinal, and five others are in court in the latest pedophilia scandal rocking the Roman Catholic Church. Correspondent Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
The sexual abuse allegations date back to the 1980s and 1990s. They involve Father Bernard Prenat, a priest in France's Lyon diocese, who has admitted to wrongdoing and is due to go on trial later this year. But one of the country's most prominent clerics, Lyon's archbishop, Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, is accused of covering up the abuse. If found guilty, he faces up to 3 years in jail and a $54,000 fine. Cardinal Barbarin denies the charges. He says he took action as soon as he found out about the sexual abuse allegations many years later. Barbarin reportedly sought advice about how to handle the allegations from a Vatican official who will not be present at the trial on grounds of diplomatic immunity.
The president of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim, will resign effective February 1st, more than 3 years ahead of his term's expiration. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world, around the clock, at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Christopher Cruz, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, January 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Following a failed coup in Gabon yesterday, the opposition reiterates its belief in the lawful change of government.
As a political party, we have always said that even though we have some big political crises in this country, we should find the solution of this crisis inside the constitution.
Paul Marie Gonjou is the Deputy Executive Secretary of Gabon's main opposition National Union Party. Zimbabwe hospitals turn away patients as doctors' strike drags on. Nigeria's main opposition PDP demands press freedom ahead of February's presidential election. And Gambia's Truth Reconciliation Commission begins public hearings about abuses during Yahya Jammeh's regime.
It is time to find the truth and justice, to heal the nation, and to move forward as one people, united in our determination to ensure that no person's human rights are violated with impunity.
Lamin Cisse is the chairperson of Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. An Amnesty International official expresses concern about violence in Mali. And this morning, a profile of Ugandan music icon Idrisa Musuza, popularly known as Eddie Kenzo. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Gabonese opposition official says despite the country's chronic political crisis, the opposition has always believed in a constitutional change of government. This comes after Gabonese authorities Monday said they foiled an attempted coup, killing two suspected plotters and capturing seven others, including the alleged coup leader, Lieutenant Kelly Ondo Obiang. Authorities have imposed a curfew and the internet has been cut off. Gabonese President Ali Bongo has not returned to the country since suffering a stroke in Saudi Arabia in October last year. Paul Marie Gonjou, Deputy Executive Secretary of Gabon's main opposition National Union Party, says the capital, Libreville, appears calm on Monday evening.
What is happening now is the situation is going normal. People are trying to live a normal life in some areas. We have police and army patrolling the city, and we have the impression that life is going normal, but we don't know exactly what is the feelings of the people, the real feelings of people. We hope that the businesses will be open tomorrow, then the school also, and then we can think that the country is going normal.
This Lieutenant Kelly Ondo Obiang, the leader of the so-called coup, he had asked people to come in the streets to support him. Did people come in the street, or why do you think people did not come?
I think that we have been caught by surprise this morning when we heard about this communique on the national radio asking people to come down on the street to manifest. We have been caught by surprise. I think that the people here are kind of cautious about what is going on in this country, and they don't want to be part of something they don't understand. And that might be the reason why there are not a lot of people on the street.
We hear that there is a curfew. Do you see any sign of a curfew? What about social media? What about the internet?
The internet has been shut down since 8:30 this morning. People are just waiting for the next stage. The government came on TV tonight asking people to live normal life, to open business, and asking people to go to school and whatever, but we'll see tomorrow.
Is there a doubt among people, or say political leadership, that perhaps this was a kind of fake coup?
That is why I said it was bizarre and weird, because we didn't understand the motivation. Even though we heard what the guy said on the radio and on TV about his message for the people.
The African Union has condemned the attempted coup, saying that it rejects anti-constitutional change. What do you make of that?
As a political party, the National Union has always said that we want the vacancy of power at the head of state being fulfilled, and we want that the President of Senate be sworn to take over, and that is constitutional. We have always spoken about this and said that even though we have some big political crisis in this country, We should find the solution of this crisis inside the constitution. That is our position. That's what we said yesterday, we said that today, and we will say that tomorrow.
Paul Marie Ganjou is the Deputy Executive Secretary of Gabon's main opposition National Union Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. The Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission on Monday began public hearings into human rights abuses committed under the 22-year rule of former President Yahya Jammeh. The probe is expected to last for 2 years and will cover events leading up to the coup that brought Yahya Jammeh to power in 1994 and the failures of individuals and institutions that enabled his two-decade dictatorship. Moudou Diouf has more from Banjul.
The commission's mandate is to investigate and establish an impartial record of the nature, causes, and the extent of human rights violations committed under the former dictator's rule. At the start of proceedings on Monday, the chairperson of the commission, Lamine Diéssissé, a former United Nations diplomat, said it is time to heal the nation.
It is about the victims of violations of human rights and abuses that took place over 22 years, and it is about the Gambian people who are still grappling with the legacies of dictatorship and authoritarian rule. It is time to find the truth and justice, to heal the nation, and to move forward as one people, united in our determination to ensure that no person's human rights are violated with impunity, and that no government can impose dictatorship on the Gambian people again.
Under Yahya Jammeh's repressive regime, the country offered no hope for justice. But as testimonies begin into the massive atrocities allegedly committed under his watch, there is renewed hope for justice among the victims. Abdoulkarim Jammeh, who uses clutches to walk after sustaining gunshot wounds in 2000 in a student's demonstration, which left 14 people dead, said he is hopeful the perpetrators will be punished.
RRC has come to inception. And that gives us a hope that we are going to get justice because of injustice which has happened, which occurred during this, the course of 22 years, is huge. The victims will have justice, and the perpetrators also will be teach a lesson whereby such thing should never happen in the Gambia anymore.
The hearings are coming after 2 years of broad nationwide consultations and increasing anticipation among victims and human rights defenders. However, the government in Banjul has been criticized in some quarters for allowing people accused of rights abuses under Jammeh to continue to serve, especially in the security service. Meanwhile, the commission is to look into rights abuses based on 26 thematic cases ranging from the causes of the 1994 coup that brought Jammeh to power to attacks on the media and extrajudicial killings. Only one witness testified on Monday, Mr. Ibrahim Chongan, who was the Deputy Inspector General of Police before the 1994 coup. Mr. Chongan narrated how he single-handedly tried to stop the coup and failed. He also narrated how he was subjected to a mock execution while in detention at the country's Mile 2 prison. For VOA, this is Moudou Diouf reporting from Banjul.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 8th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. The presidential candidate for Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has called on the international community to pressure the government to ensure press freedom ahead of the February general election. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar says it is unacceptable for the military to raid and shut down the offices of the Daily Trust newspaper and to detain journalists. His remarks came after local media reported that the military raided the paper's offices in Maiduguri and the capital, Abuja, on Sunday. Shehun Suwumi is the spokesman for former Vice President Atiku Abubakar.
There is no way we will tolerate or we'll be happy that the media houses and journalists and critical members of the society who have an alternative viewpoint to that of the leaders of the country right now will now find out that they cannot carry out their trade. Their premises will be hounded and harassed by the police. We're not just unhappy, we're extremely unhappy. And we call on the international community to understand that Nigeria has such a large population. You can't have any government in Nigeria begin to undermine the security and the comfort and the freedom of everybody, not after passing the Freedom of Information Act, not after having the members of a thriving democracy. the freedom of the press is the minimum that anybody would tolerate. And if anybody is going to now take the freedom of the press from them and begin to harass them, obviously, His Excellency Atiku Abubakar has every reason to be concerned, and he has every reason to say that he wants that to stop, and he wants the leaders of the day today, he wants President Muhammadu Buhari to call whoever is behind that to order so that they don't just only shame themselves, but also embarrass the totality of the Nigerian people.
I understand the Vice President said he is demanding press freedom and freedom of speech as enshrined in the Constitution. However, some people are saying that the issue of national security should be paramount.
Yes, of course, national security is paramount and must be paramount. But how do other countries do national security without necessarily hounding the press? We don't have a higher than elevated national security challenge than most countries in the world. And we don't find democratic countries in the world now hounding the press and misbehaving under the guise of doing national security. Extreme vigilance is the hallmark of freedom in a society that must be peaceful and must be free. And if everybody, especially the members of the international community, take their eyes off or tolerate unacceptable excuses as reason why people must be hounded, why the media houses must be locked up, why materials must be carted away, why the freedom of the press must not be guaranteed, then what are we saying to ourselves? If we need to admonish, if we need to speak in very strong terms to say that press freedom must be guaranteed, freedom of opposition must be guaranteed. If the government has a problem with any of the organizations, it can take them to court. That's what decent societies do.
Officials of the administration are saying President Buhari has demonstrated commitment to press freedom and freedom of speech. Why do you disagree?
Yeah, it's the heat of the pudding is in the kitchen. You have to ask people that work for the media. You have to ask journalists. You have to ask members of the civil society organization. You have to ask the publishers of the title of Daily Trust. You have to ask the journalists that was locked up in Kaduna for a long time. They have not had it this bad. We've had a lot of government in charge of the country, and never have we had in the democracy this kind of nonsense. The last time we felt anything close to this was during the dark days of the Nigerian dictatorship. And even in the dictatorship, there was a very huge outcry that everybody condemned it. How much more now in a democracy? We will not accept this. We will not tolerate it. Tolerance is the hallmark for anybody that wants to wield authority in a democracy. And it is the responsibility of the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, to call his troops to order, to let them understand that all organs of government must commit and submit themselves to democratic authority.
Segun Sowumi is the spokesman for former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. New Year's Eve and New Year's Day killings in both Burkina Faso and Mali resulted in more than 80 deaths. The community violence targeted the Fulani communities in both countries, though in Burkina Faso, it was an alleged retaliation attack on Fulani after a community of mostly Mosi lost 7 people to armed men. In both cases, though, says Corinne Dufka, West Africa Associate Director for Human Rights Watch, there are concerns that increased violence will help Islamist militias recruit followers.
This is the latest incident involving ethnically allied militias who are attacking Pol civilians whom they allege are supporting armed Islamist groups. The incident has been denounced by the United Nations as well as the government, and the government has reacted. They said they have arrested 7 individuals allegedly involved in the incident and are conducting an investigation. So that's the good news. The bad news is that this has been going on for several years now and had greatly intensified in 2018. I personally documented over 200 killings by these ethnically allied militias in 2018 in the Mopti region, and it's concerning that the incidents are continuing in 2019.
Is one of the negative effects of this also when they kill these Fulani groups because they're suspected of being Islamist militants, that this causes more people to actually join the jihadist insurgency because they view it as a way to defend themselves?
Yeah, we are concerned that this type of violence does push the Pol Fulani. It puts them between a rock and a hard place, and it pushes some of them to join the armed Islamists as they feel that they have no other solution. That said, all ethnic groups in the context of this violence, which is underscored by the presence of armed Islamist groups, the growth of armed Islamist groups in central Mali, have called out for increasing presence of the Malian security forces.
There were multiple attacks in central Burkina Faso around the same time. One of them resulted in 39 people killed in a Fulani herding communities. Now, while there's different, obviously different groups, different countries involved in these separate attacks in Mali and Burkina Faso, are they related and are they all feeding into the same jihadist network as well?
Yes, we're extremely concerned about this new allegation in Burkina Faso of ethnically allied militias allied to the Mossi ethnic group taking security into their own hands and attacking a Pol community in Burkina Faso. We will be investigating this incident, and we're concerned that this dynamic of violence by ethnically allied militias, underscored by the presence of armed Islamist groups, is spreading into Burkina Faso as well.
That was Corinne Dufka, West Africa Associate Director for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington. Hospitals in Zimbabwe are turning away patients as strike by doctors enters its sixth week. There is no end in sight, as President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government says it cannot meet the doctors' demands. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The Parade Network Group of Hospitals, Zimbabwe's largest treatment center, is largely empty as doctors' strike that began December 1 drags on. 69-year-old Kasirina Zveka had a lung infection in September, according to her medical records. After numerous tests were done, it was confirmed that her right lung had gone bad and needed to be removed. But by then, doctors were on strike. She was discharged December 13 and was told to return Monday for the ailing lung to be removed. But with the strike unresolved, that did not happen. Her daughter Margaret Chikoti says the family has paid for her treatment, but only nurses are attending to her mother. Chikoti says, "We have no idea what is really happening to her mother since December 13. All we see is her discharging some blood-stained stinging fluids through a hole pierced by nurses under her right breast. What is happening inside her body? Is it getting worse? We just give her painkillers and use ointment to clean her wound," says Chikoti. "We hope that the doctors' negotiations with the government bear fruit and they return to work." Doctors held a meeting Monday and resolved to remain on strike until their demands are met. The doctors want the government to equip hospitals with modern technology, sufficient medicine, and protective clothing for doctors. They also want to be paid in US dollars instead of Zimbabwe's depreciating currency, known as bond notes. The doctors also say they do not want to prescribe drugs that are not in stock, a practice that forces patients to seek out black market drugs. The Medicines Control Authority of Zimbabwe has warned about such drugs being fake, expired, and unsafe to use. The government, meanwhile, said last week it is not in a position to pay doctors or any civil servants in US dollars. Officials say they have imported medicines and are now stocking hospitals. But with doctors still on strike, that news might not be enough to help patients like Serena Zveka. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Uganda music icon Idrisa Musuza, popularly known as Eddie Kenzo, says he is impressed by fellow artist Robert Chakulanyi, a.k.a. Bobby Wine's, call for a people power movement. Kenzo, who is celebrating his 10 years in the music business, says he is inspired by the fact that music has made him friends all over the world. Recently, he talked to reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinch in Uganda's capital, Kampala.
Kenzo and his band rehearse songs in Makindye, a Kampala suburb. He's practicing ahead of the concert dubbed Eddie Kenzo, 10 Years in Music. Born in an impoverished family in Masaka district, western Uganda, Kenzo's life was never easy after losing his mother when he was just 5. At times, Kenzo lived on streets, and affording an education was a nightmare. But today, Kenza has become an international music icon. He attributes his success to hard work and self-discipline.
You have to know what you want in life. You need to realize who you are and what you want, who you want to be, what you want to do. You know, it leads you on the way where you know where you're going. It makes you know where I came from and where you are going. That's what I mean, like managing yourself.
Kenzo rose to prominence after his song, City of Loss, in which he featured the then-unknown Triple X Ghetto Kids in 2014. The video, which went viral, had street kids dancing. Its success led the launch of a petition to have the dancing children appear on the Ellen DeGeneres television talk show.
Lekanzine, nenzina mumama, bulamu bachisera, ato muziki zuri sana. Lekanzine, anenzina mumama, bulamu bachisera, ato muziki tam sana. Inze sitarusi, sitarusi, nze sitarusi ndibos, sitarusi. Dance, dance. Yes, man.
Kenzo says he and the triplets, Ghetto Kids, made each other popular.
All of us, we made each other popular. I came up with an idea. I put them in the video. They did a good job and people loved them. Even if I had an idea and I put them in the video and they don't do a good job, we shouldn't have succeeded anything. So me, I came up with an idea. I gave it to them. They did it better. And the song went viral. So we all did a great job.
Since then, Kenzo has received both local and international awards, including the BET Awards in 2015. He has performed to both local and international audiences.
After satisfying all Ugandans and become one of the most loved musicians in my country or artist, I expanded myself for Africa because I'm from Africa.
Afrobeat artist Malcolm James Sewanyana, stage name Sewa Sewa, says inspired by Kenzo's style of music.
He's so much hardworking and he's focused. Adding on that is too much determined.
Kenzo says he has no favorite song. In fact, he says he loves all his songs. However, he shares this a cappella of jubilation.
Mwana mwala come, let's go. Oline dado mulenzi wa wano. I go give you money. Bremsida, you go shake your body. At the jubilation, eh?
Wow, that's a good one. And
for VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, a Gabonese opposition official says despite the country's chronic political crisis, the opposition has always believed in the constitutional change of government. This comes after Gabonese authorities Monday said they foiled an attempted coup, killing two suspected plotters and capturing seven others, including the alleged coup leader, Lieutenant Kelly Ondo Obiang. Authorities have imposed a curfew and the internet has been cut off. Gabonese President Ali Bongo has not returned to the country since suffering a stroke in Saudi Arabia in October last year. Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission Monday began public hearings into human rights abuses committed under the 22-year rule of former President Yahya Jammeh. The probe is expected to last for 2 years and will cover events leading up to the coup that brought Yahya Jammeh to power in 1994 and the failures of individuals and institutions that enable his two-decade dictatorship. And that's it for this Tuesday edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa your weekend destination.